You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Jemima Houston tōki ingoa, no mai haere mai ki te Wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Tuesday, the 8th of June. My name is Jemima and I'm your host for the hour, and I have Lyric producing for me today. She is not currently in studio, she's working on some last minute bits for the show for you today, but she will be back very shortly. How are you going today? Send us through a text today and let us know what's going on, what you did on your long weekend, whether you saw any good news on your long weekend. We've had a lot of chit-chat in the newsroom this morning about how long weekends always bear very little news following that, particularly local New Zealand news. So send us something in. Have you seen anything locally to you that would be interesting for the newsroom to investigate? Let us know. 5395. Anyway, if I Akine, coming up on the show today, we have the fourth episode of Tomorrow's World, Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins, segment where they delve into the world of science and our futures on this planet we call Earth. This week they discuss imposter syndrome and the psychological effect on students. I then speak to Lissy Finker Heather, the Auckland Regional Manager of Forest and Bird, about the impact the planned Kennedy Point Marina on Waiheke Island will have and is already having on the local little blue penguin or korora colony. Lyric finally chats with an anonymous nursing student about the future of their profession, particularly in regards to the strike going on across the country with nurses today. He aho o whakaro, I would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces. So tukupā tui mai, you can send us through a text on 5395, as I said just before, or Wire Mai Rane, give us a call in studio on 309 3879. Also, after the show, koe e wariwari e ahi ana koutou, te whakarongo ki ēnei kōrero anō, he pakihiri rokiroki maronga i te pai tukutuku o Irirangi Poho, me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com. Head up to the top on the right, go to Becasts and then The Wire, and all of our pieces are there for you to listen at your leisure. If you want to catch up with us on our social media, we are 95BFM News on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. If you want to see what the news team's up to, what other segments you can catch up with throughout the week, we do have a show midday to one every day, Monday to Friday. So check us out there if you want to see what's coming up on the show. But anyway, enough of me chit-chatting you into the intro of the show. Let's crack on into it.
Irirangi Poho, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
So, this week on Tomorrow's World, Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins are creating a segment where they delve into the world of science and our futures on the planet. This week, they are discussing imposter syndrome and the psychological effect of it on students. Here they are.
Hey Earthlings, I'm Stella Huggins.
And I'm Isla Christensen. Welcome back to the fourth episode of our Wire segment, Tomorrow's World,
where we want to look at some big ideas of science and society with a focus on what we as humans will be impacted by and can influence around the world on this Earth rock that we call home.
Last episode, we talked trash with Dominic Salmon. Dom works with 3R in Hawke's Bay, looking at innovative ways that we can create a circular economy and reuse our waste.
Now, usually we've talked to experts in their field.
But this week, as I said at graduation, I realised that there's a topic that us students need to address.
Now, you've probably heard of faking it until you make it. But what happens when you've actually made it and now you're questioning whether you're still faking it?
This week, it's all about imposter syndrome.
What is that? Do I have it?
Well, according to Dr. Terry Fitzsimmons at the University of Queensland, essentially it means that people who experience success, or even just in their normal career trajectory, constantly question their worth and attribute their progression to luck rather than skill.
Oh, so like the classic Kiwi trope of tall poppy syndrome. I'm sensing some similarities there.
For sure.
That sounds like a common student experience.
It definitely is, and that's why this week we interviewed some University of Auckland students all about their experiences with imposter syndrome. So Stella, I know that we spend most of our time at the School of Science, so what are your thoughts on those law students?
No comment, Your Honour.
Good one. I think, though, law students, they seem pretty smart, like they're onto it, right?
Oh, they're smart, for sure.
But I think they're almost like us as well. I went down to the School of Law and found out how law students, even in their last semester, feel like they have imposter syndrome as well. I'm going to play you a quote now from a student that we interviewed, and I want to hear your reaction.
All right.
I think that imposter syndrome comes in a lot with my education because I don't feel comfortable going to lecturers to ask questions. I feel like if I go and show them my work, they're going to be like, this is ridiculous, why are you even at university? So I've never been to an office hour. I have only ever emailed lecturers maybe twice in my whole 4.5 years of uni, purely for this perception that I have of myself and my position within the faculty. I think it also comes into play in lectures as well, not asking questions in front of your peers, just comparing yourself to everyone around you and hindering your own ability to make the most of your education.
That made my heart hurt a little bit, I'll be honest with you, and I did relate to the part about questions. It feels like my heart's in my feet every time I have to talk in a lecture.
I 100% agree, and I think a key point there is, you know, we're spending thousands to be here, but it's our perception of what others will think, what the lecturers will think, that is maybe hindering our own growth and our own opportunities. And something that I think now, in my fifth year doing postgrad, I'm suddenly like, I'm going to go to office hours, I'm going to have contact with my lecturers and just try and make the most of my own ability and learning, because really we all start from the same position, don't we?
Absolutely.
So I'm trying to think though, there must be some like psychology behind this. So that's your background, Stella. What have you found doing some research on it? What's the science behind imposter syndrome?
Well, from the abstract of some of the papers that I read, and only from the abstract, since that's the only thing that anyone really reads, it seems that it could be a remnant of evolution. Back in the days when we were hanging out on the African plains with a whole bunch of predators ready to eat us, humans developed a primitive arousal status, nowadays just plain old anxiety, to anticipate danger. It's also been hypothesized that perfectionism was an evolutionary advantage.
Oh, fight or flight, right? Which has now led to this crippling anxiety in the corporate board in 2021.
Yeah, if you really boil it down, then yeah, kinda. However, it manifests itself for people in a bunch of different ways. There's a lot of research coming out about the groups that it tends to affect.
And it can affect people across faculties, genders, ethnicities, and cultural backgrounds. So we interviewed Alex Chappell, who studies physics, about his experience with imposter syndrome.
Alex told me about the vicious cycle that it creates, saying, oftentimes I start doubting myself, which makes me worse at physics, which then makes me further doubt myself, which again makes me worse at physics, and so it cycles. An anonymous commenter, who is also a physics major, told me they experience imposter syndrome the most when it comes to assignments.
And imposter syndrome is often discussed in relation to big CEOs and the business world, but it's super common here at uni and in the science community as well.
Absolutely, and Alex discussed this with me, saying it's prevalent in science because academia as a whole has a strong emphasis on striving for excellence. He says a possible remedy to this could be universities teaching people to embrace mistakes rather than just rewarding people for getting things right.
And the mindset is so important when it comes to imposter syndrome, and it seems to affect who's impacted by it most.
Multiple studies have shown that marginalised students experience imposter syndrome more often, and both Alex and our non-physics students say it's easier to have if you're in an underrepresented group.
Visibility is so important and makes such a difference.
It definitely does.
And to end our segment for this week, we're lucky to be joined by an engineering graduate who's currently in a graduate role at an Auckland civil engineering firm. I asked him what's it like to be the youngest person in the workplace and what has helped him to overcome the imposter syndrome to make him feel more comfortable in his new role.
Being the youngest person in the office is a definite challenge because whilst you're at uni, basically everyone's the same age as you, and coming into a workforce, like, you've got mixed ages, like 25 to like 50s, and you just have to fit in somehow. But it's more when you get challenges in terms of, like, you get a assigned job, and somehow it just takes you like three times as longer than the senior member in the team. You just think, oh shit, what am I doing here? But I guess once you get it done, you feel a little bit more confident for the next time you're doing it. And so it's all about just getting experience.
So there you have it. From law, arts, science and engineering, we're all going through it.
Yes, ma'am. And hopefully it makes you feel a bit better and more like you fit in, knowing everyone else on this floating earth rock is just as confused as you are.
It does make me feel a bit better knowing it's not me, it's my brain structure and the frameworks that I work under.
Yeah, weirdly positive. And thanks to everyone we chatted to this episode. Join us next time where we chat the vegan diet.
Stay critical, Earthlings.
Peace.
That was Tomorrow's World with Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins. We look forward to the next piece they both bring to the Tuesday Wire in a couple of weeks. You're tuned into The Wire on 95BFM. I'm Jemima. I'm your host. I'm here with you for the hour. Send us through a text. Tell us what you thought of that last piece. Tell me how you're going. Tell me how your long weekend was. 5395. Flick us a text. We will be back shortly after a little break. But firstly, here is Go Up Moses by Roberta Flack.
Thank you. trouble. Let Pharaoh go. You don't need him. You don't need his tricks. You don't need his trinkets. Let Pharaoh go. Pharaoh doesn't want you, but he needs you. My people, let Pharaoh go. Without you, there is no Pharaoh. So all you have to do to let him go is let him go. Just wake up tomorrow morning and say, bye.
Pack your marmalade sandwiches, because Paddington Bear's first concert is coming to Auckland Town Hall. From an original story by Michael Bond, follow everyone's favourite Peruvian bear on an adventure from meeting the Brown family at Paddington Station to his debut as a conductor at the Royal Albert Hall. Paddington Bear's first concert with the Auckland Philharmonia Orchestra at the Auckland Town Hall, Saturday, June 12th. Save with a family pass. Go to apo.co.nz.
Lossless. The new album from Tamaki musician, singer and producer Elena is out now. Bringing together elements of electronica, dream pop and art pop, Elena's sophomore album is a chapbook of sonic poetry. Lossless, the new album from Elena, available now on all streaming services.
What's in that soup? It looks like a mix of ingredients that, while delicious individually, are even better together.
Ha! That's not soup. It's the Student Radio Network!
Only the freshest ingredients go into the SRN Top 10. Te Te Kau o Rongo Ririke o Aotearoa gathers up the highest quality, locally grown tracks from New Zealand's student radio stations and brings them together in a fragrant, flavourful and distinctly piquant mix. A chart show for those who prefer to order off menu. Tuesday after 6 on 95 BFM Drive or online at srn.nz. Brought to you by the Student Radio Network.
I'm disappointed by the government these days. Sometimes they just need a good kick in the backside.
The Wire.
You're on The Wire on 95 BFM. I'm Jemima and I'm your host for the hour. I just got a text in regarding the last piece on the show, which was Tomorrow's World by Isla and Stella, which was talking a little bit about imposter syndrome and how that affects university students. Frank has just texted in and said, what do people who don't go to university do about this syndrome, and do we even get it? My thoughts. So I suppose my thoughts on that is that I think that imposter syndrome can certainly affect anybody, whether you're at university or not. It's that feeling of not being competent or not being good enough for something. So I certainly think no matter who you are and whatever experiences you're going through, that is definitely a feeling that you could have, feeling out of place or not feeling good enough to do something. I don't 100% know what I would do about that. I suppose it's just, you know, that positive reinforcement in yourself, knowing that even if you don't feel good about it at the moment, feeling good, being like, I'll get there and I'll learn. But again, I think text in. Is it something that you've felt? If you're just somebody in your workplace, or whether you've, I don't know, a family situation or a friend situation, have you felt imposter syndrome? Let us know. Send us through a text on 5395. We will be right back with the next piece, but here first is Sit by Japanese Breakfast.
Human name in your mind.
I don't know, and frankly, the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
The Wire.
You're on The Wire. This is 95BFM, and I'm Jemima, your host. The planned Kennedy Bay Marina in Putiki Bay on Waiheke Island has been making headlines for the last wee while. Here on the 95BFM news team, we have been particularly covering the Uri o Ngāti Pāua occupation of Putiki Bay. The iwi are calling for the Kennedy Bay marina plans to be canned in order to protect the ancestral moana and taonga that the bay represents. However, this week, I'm speaking to another group who are concerned about the effects of the marina. Forest and Bird are calling for Auckland Council to stop work at Kennedy Point to protect the local Little Blue Penguin, or Kurura, colony. A Kurura colony can be found just a metre away from the footprint of the Kennedy Bay marina plans on a rocky wall. Kurura are native and are an at-risk and declining species in New Zealand. Forest and Bird say that the construction of the marina will disturb and damage the habitat of the birds. I spoke to Forest and Bird Auckland Regional Manager, Lissy Fechner-Heather, about the Kurura species, what impact the marina will have on this particular colony, and what the group expects the Auckland Council to do about this issue.
So Little Blue Penguin Kurura, they're a native bird species or penguin species to New Zealand, and their conservation status is at risk and declining. So they're very little birds. They only grow up to about 30 centimetres in height and weigh only up to 1 kg. They used to be really common across New Zealand, actually, but now they are mostly on the offshore islands where there's less disturbance. For example, you know, islands like Waiheke. But over time, I think there's been increased threat on their populations from coastal development and developing in areas where they're likely to have their habitats. And so the situation with them on Waiheke, so they currently are, there's a colony in Putiki Bay, which is the Kennedy Point where the car ferry arrives, and there's a rock wall there. And there's been a couple of surveys that have been done which are all kind of producing different results, but the footage that has come out lately that has been captured by Protect Putiki and Māori o Te Moana, who are doing amazing work there, actually just bearing witness and capturing footage of what the impact is of this construction activity on their colony. So their footage has kind of indicated that they're all through the rock wall. I mean, they're very active during the day. They are going out and foraging. The footage of them at night shows that they're pair bonding at the moment, so they're mating. And this colony is about 1 metre away from the construction footprint of this marina. And the images and the videos that have come out, that they're on Facebook, you know, they're not secret. They show that, you know, they've got, for example, muscle buoys that the developers put up around the construction footprint, and they essentially bang up against the rock wall. So there was a video of a korora coming out, you know, probably coming out to forage, and it couldn't get past these black muscle buoys. So there's an assumption that they can just swim under them, but this showed that they actually don't, and they don't know how to get past them.
So obviously there are already problems when it comes to the marina and the sort of the footprint of it and the beginning of construction. How will further construction and then eventually the full marina being finished affect this colony of korora?
Well, I mean, at this stage, the developer is saying that this is not even construction that they're doing, but, I mean, you just have to kind of go to the site to see. There is a lot of noise, there's lights, there's drilling into the seabed. They've erected fences, so they've drilled on top of the rock wall. I mean, that is construction activity to me, and I think that just showing already what this pre-construction activity, the impact it's having, can give you a good indication of what the actual construction, when that starts, how that's going to affect korora. But also, when the marina is in operation, you know, there's a further risk of predators, so people that bring their dogs, which are one of the biggest predators to korora in New Zealand. So there's the dogs, there is the coming and going of the boats, the recreational boats in and out of the marina. So the rock wall is where the marina is up against. So every time the korora want to leave to forage for food, they basically will be swimming in the path of where all the recreational boats will be coming in and out. You know, it's hard to predict the exact impact, but based on what you're seeing now, and then with increased predators once the marina is in operation, I must say it's pretty disappointing that Auckland Council has rubber-stamped this consent, let it go ahead.
I think the big question there is, was the korora colony even really considered? I understand that there was a management in regards to the colony, but what's sort of the situation there? Is it outdated? Why has this become a problem?
Well, I guess, you know, probably from our perspective, and I mean, you know, we, Forest and Bird, did challenge the resource consent 3 years ago when it first got granted, but it does seem that Auckland Council did kind of just rubber stamp this consent. So if you look at the construction management plan and all the information that had to be provided as, you know, for the consent condition, the section relating to korora is really just a few paragraphs and a few bullet points as to how to manage korora. We had issues with that because we did get the plan looked at by an independent korora expert, and, you know, they said that it was totally inadequate, hence why there was that big meeting about 6 weeks ago with all the key stakeholders, and the outcome of that was that the developer agreed to undertake another penguin survey of the colony, bearing in mind that, you know, Auckland Council had already consented it, so this is now the developer actually doing more that they had to do, which, you know, it just goes to show that the very bare minimum was approved by Auckland Council. So now we've got a new penguin management plan, which is still, it is still being looked at by council, and it's still being considered by council, Mana Whenua, and it has been sent to Forest and Bird. But I think, in our view, it's disappointing because all penguin colonies can behave quite differently. And I think what's really important in this case is that people who live on Waiheke, such as Native Bird Rescue, the general manager of Native Bird Rescue, she works with this colony often, so she should have been engaged with to understand the particular behaviours of this colony, but she wasn't. So there are timeframes of, say, nesting and mating and things in that new management plan which are actually incorrect, and they're actually guiding when construction can take part. And also, you know, I think it's really important to note that there has never been an independent penguin expert to actually go to site to have a look and contribute to a penguin management plan. So I think, in summary, it's really disappointing because council have just approved basically a very bare minimum, and anything that's happened after that has been just the developer doing it, or, you know, and that's a result of community groups such as ourselves, Protect Putiki, Māori Otemoana, and Native Bird Rescue, really pushing hard for more to happen.
So speaking a little bit more as well about those different groups, you know, Putiki Bay and the Kennedy Point Marina have been in the news a lot recently for a number of different reasons. Could you speak to the relationship between the different groups that are protesting the construction of this marina and occupying the bay?
Yeah, I mean, we've all got obviously shared aspirations. We all want best outcomes for Korora. You know, other groups such as Protect Putiki, they are currently running a petition to get the resource consent overturned. So they're running a petition online. And of course, Forest and Bird, we do support all the efforts of these small community groups, and we think it's, you know, excellent that they're there every day bearing witness to what's actually happening. But overall, we all want the best outcome for Korora. Some of us groups have got slightly different aims as well that we're working towards with this project. But we all support each other, and I think ultimately it's disappointing that these community groups have had to kind of pick up the slack for Auckland Council failing to do their best at protecting an at-risk and declining native species.
So finally, what are your expectations for Auckland Council now? Obviously, there's been a failure up until this point. How could Auckland Council rectify that failure?
Well, I guess there's probably two prongs to that response. One is maybe the question about the consents altogether, and should we have the development of more marinas in the Hauraki Gulf, which is, as we all know, in a state of decline from all the coastal development pressures. So I guess there's a question around should consent be granted for more projects like that? But secondly, I think if we're just thinking about Korora, it's really important that an independent korora expert comes to site to look at the area and develop a robust penguin management plan moving forward, because at this stage it hasn't been done. I think that would probably be the best next step right now. So, for example, someone like Professor John Cochrane, who is New Zealand's leading korora expert, he has indicated his willingness to come up and actually do that. So I think that's really important, and Auckland Council should really be also pushing for that too, as independent expert would be the best.
That was Forest and Bird Auckland Regional Manager Lissy Finker-Heather speaking about the impact of the Kennedy Point Marina on the local korora, or little blue penguin, colony. If you're interested in looking more into the korora colony and what is happening in the Putiki Bay now, head to the Protect Putiki Facebook page or Instagram. There are a number of videos and photos and information available there. Do you have any thoughts about the construction of the Kennedy Point Marina at Putiki Bay on Waiheke Island? Send us through a text on 5395 or call us on 309-3879 if you've got anything to say on that. We will be back with one last piece after this. Here is Green Smoke by Amoogie.
I've been split in two. I recall. Wonders of the ancient world. The pyramids at Giza. The cunning riddle of the Sphinx.
But now one ancient secret has been solved by the good people at Bread and Butter.
Their ancient grain sourdough uses heritage cereals, croissant, spelt, and sorghum, and follows the age-old method of sourdough fermentation dating back to ancient Egypt. So it's great for your gut, tastes delicious, and is better for the planet. Ancient grain sourdough at Bread and Butter, Greylin, Ponsonby, and the Coast Plaza in Whangaparoa. Order online at breadandbutter.nz.
The first drop of Record Store Day 2021 is on its way to Southbound Records. Head on down to get your fill of super exclusive Record Store Day releases, plus enough coffee and delicious home baking to fuel your dusty, dusty fingers all day long. Record Store Day Drop 1 2021 at Southbound Records, 132 Simon Street, Saturday, June 12th from 9 a.m.
And I'm here to say, I'm looking for a flatmate in a limb that's grey. You gotta be cool and you gotta be tough. You gotta be a vegan and no pets or smokers.
Room in Freeman's Bay Cottage. Me, urban sophisticate, wine expert, French cinema aficionado. You, educated, tidy, silent.
Room in flat, Mount Eden. Text Dave.
Whoever or wherever you're after, the 95BFM Accommodation Guide is here for you. Email your listing to accommodationguide@95bfm.com. The 95BFM Accommodation Guide, every Thursday on drive and online at 95bfm.com.
The Wire. Their relationships with their girlfriends or their wives. Wife. No one, they shouldn't have more than one wife at a time.
You're on The Wire on 95BFM with Jemima and Lyric. Here is Lyric with her piece.
Tomorrow, around 30,000 nurses across the nation will strike over the government's public sector pay freeze announcement from May this year. New Zealand Nurses Organisation lead advocate David Waite says members are facing serious nursing workforce issues and that pay rates do not attract people into the profession or retain those already in the profession, and leads to staffing issues which are stretching workers to breaking point and putting them and their patients at risk. I spoke to a final year nursing student about her experience in nursing and her thoughts on the future of the profession. Looking at the future of nursing right now, does it put you off from joining the workforce?
It's been really difficult seeing just in 2021 how sort of off-putting the idea of working in healthcare is for this generation, which I think is really saddening, given that nursing and medicine as a whole has been something where other professions have really enjoyed and really been involved in over the years. To see young people not pursuing those kinds of roles because of the bureaucracy of pay and working conditions is really sad, given what is going on in the world at the moment with COVID and other things.
Yeah, coming off the heels of COVID, having this huge movement where we were all trying to support essential workers, it must feel like a kick in the guts to be having to strike a year later.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think a lot of people, and there's been a lot of conversation about this over the past couple of years, given how much privilege we had in New Zealand to a certain extent to be able to shut down our economies and transition them to at-home living. And whilst a lot of us could transition our workforce to our computer at home, for healthcare workers, we still had to go out every day, work long hours, and have to kind of deal with the fear and insecurity of the virus. So to kind of have our whole workforce be so generous and selfless during that period and then have to kind of bear the brunt of austerity measures by this government is quite upsetting.
If things were to just stay the same, could you see yourself being a nurse in New Zealand for the long term?
I think it's a difficult one to answer. No one gets into healthcare that doesn't love the work. And so there's that nature of kind of loyalty to the profession that I think would be able to sustain me for a while. But it's difficult to see, given the nature of house prices, rents, and just like the cost of living in New Zealand. It's difficult for me to see myself being able to sustain, I guess, a family in the future or just any kind of really good quality of life whilst being a nurse. Yeah, if things don't change, yeah, for sure.
Do your classes warn and prepare you for the level of burnout that nurses face?
I think what's so sad about how ingrained these like characteristics of the job are into nursing is that it's kind of almost this thing where in order to be accepted into the course, and well, not to be accepted, but in order to make it through the training, it's kind of what you sign up for, and anyone that gets into the job is aware of that. And so it's this kind of interesting thing where so many different people who I think would make amazing healthcare workers are just excluded from the profession just because of the fact that when people think of what is needed to be a nurse, it's resilience, you know, an ability to work a 45, 50-hour week, physical strength as well. Like, it's very difficult to become a nurse if you have disabilities, whether it be psychological or physical ones. So to answer your question, I think it's not so much that we're prepared for it, but we're prepared for practice by our study. It's more that it's part of what we sign up for, and it's an indirect thing that we have to just be aware of and accept as being part of what the job is.
Have you witnessed people in your cohort leave nursing because of the pressure of the field, because they can't handle what the job is demanding?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, as a nursing student, we work a lot of hours, quite a significant amount of free labour, in a sense, we supply to the hospitals that we work at. And having to kind of factor in working to pay bills on top of all that work we do for free, as well as the academic load, and just the kind of mere psychological toll that we end up facing when we deal with death and when we deal with sickness, when we deal with kind of being in this position where we see how our healthcare system fails certain groups, whether it be Māori or those with mental health issues or just any minority, and just everyday basic people with economic and racial privilege at the same time. Taking on the physical load of work, the psychological kind of load of the job, and then like being unable to just kind of do basic things like pay our bills and, you know, get to the hospital, get to uni, all of those sorts of things. I've definitely seen people have to drop out or put a pause on their study because they just can't function, they can't juggle all of those things.
Ideally, what would be the best outcome for nurses after these strikes?
I think that's really a really hard one to answer, and I think
ideally for you, at least.
Ideally for me, I guess, as a perspective of a student, I would really, really love to see senior nurses finally get the validation that they deserve. And I don't mean validation by support on social media and, you know, people sharing articles on Facebook. I mean senior nurses finally be given the financial repayment for the amount of blood, sweat and tears they have like generously donated to the profession and to the public just by taking on a job that in a lot of ways most people in society would not want to do. And I think the reason why that's so important is because nursing is an amazing kind of profession and an amazing thing to study, and that we don't learn, it's not a completely theoretical degree. We go out and we work and we learn by direct sort of translation from the preceptors and senior nurses that we work under. And they take on a lot of responsibility in not only teaching us and shaping us into the, you know, next generation of the workforce, but just by trying to provide transformational care to people who are unwell and are at the probably worst point in their life. So I think, yeah, having some validation for that in terms of an actual real gesture, like a better wage or better working conditions, would just be amazing for the profession.
Do you have any closing comments you'd like to make?
I think it would just be, I think for too long, nursing has kind of been misrepresented in films, television, media, and there's a lot of misunderstanding about the profession. And not only would it be great to have more of a voice for nurses, but I think it would also be great to finally kind of allow nurses and get nurses into a situation where they have a seat at the table and they're able to be a part of meaningful decision making surrounding healthcare and surrounding things that the public and the community faces, because at the end of the day, nurses have such a special, nurses and all healthcare workers really have such a special ability to understand and recognize and see and in a very real, unbiased picture what is going on for a lot of the community across a variety of different issues that are socioeconomic, related to directly to health, related to culture, a variety of things. So I think, just a closing statement would be that I would love to, see nurses finally be able to share the amazing, amazing skills they have with the community in a meaningful way and be recognised for that work.
That was a nursing student speaking on her experience as a nursing student and her thoughts on her future in the profession.
That was The Wire.
That was the Tuesday Wire for another week. Thank you all to you for tuning in. Thank you for your texts. Really appreciate hearing what you've got to say. Thank you so much, Lyric, for being a wonderful producer as per.
Thank you. We did it again.
We did have a bit of a tricky one. It's hard coming off the back of a long weekend. And we've had a lot of long weekends to come off the back of the semester. So, yes. But, you know, it's all good and well. We got there in the end, so that's good. Have a lovely day out there, and we'll see you next time. Up next is Jin with the 1-4. Stay tuned into BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.